This is a No Surf Music, Burning River Fireside Chat.
With guests, Bottle Rockets.
I'm your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond. For the best in Americana, alt country, indie rock, and more, point your browser to nosurfmusic.com.
And this is another edition of No Surf Music's Burning River Fireside Chats. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond. And joining me today for a repeat appearance are the legendary alt country band, the Bottle Rockets.
Ooh,
how you doing, guys?
Good.
Awesome. And why don't you introduce yourself, say who you are.
I'm Mark, the drummer.
There you go.
John Horton, guitar.
And I'm Brian Henneman, the guy.
There we go.
And we're the James Gang.
Yes. Well, there's three of you now, so you are the James Gang.
I can play bass.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, we lost our bass player, Keith, but it's all good.
Yeah.
And as Mark just alluded to, we're actually in an interesting spot today. We're perched right over the Burning River, the Cuyahoga, in just about the exact spot where the cover album for your album by the James Gang was taken.
Yep, except we're in almost complete pitch darkness.
This is true. This is true.
Please don't mug us.
So, yeah, at any moment, Kenton, I think, is actually the fifth safest town in Ohio, though, so I think we should be fine.
All right.
But, yes, these gentlemen just wrapped up their set at the Kent stage, and we wanted to find somewhere slightly peaceful. So we had to walk a little ways, but it's all good. And you guys were great, as always. That was a terrific set. So
thank you.
Thank you for playing it. But I wanted to catch you guys because since the last time we did speak, you've had a really cool reissue. And as Brian was kind of saying from the stage, you're kind of set right in the middle of sort of a past and a future thing right now.
Right, yep.
So let's talk about the past first.
All right.
Because just recently you did reissue your first two albums, which are the self-titled Bottle Rockets and the Brooklyn Side.
Correct.
So it's been about 20 years, right? 20?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Over 20 for the first one, 21 for the first album.
All right.
And, yeah.
So the band can officially drink.
That's right. The band is old enough to drink.
Very nice.
And this year is the 20-year anniversary of the Brooklyn Side.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So why was it important for you guys to reissue them after they've been out of print for so long?
Well, because they've been out of print for so long. That's the main
reason. That's the reason.
It's just like, you know, people still want it, and mm-hmm. which is, and there was a bunch of people that never got it, that especially the Brooklyn Side. It's funny, that record came out at a funny time. It was like a lot of people that should have known about it missed out on it, mm-hmm. because it kind of got cock-blocked by a lot of other stuff real fast. It was like, that thing came out, well, it came out big time on Atlantic, actually not until 95. And it wasn't out 6 weeks when all of a sudden, like, Hootie and the Blowfish and Jewel both came out on Atlantic.
Uh-huh.
So you could see where that went. But it's cool because it came back out and like people that hadn't heard of, people were replacing old ones that they'd lost or given away
Their brother-in-law took and never returned.
They wore them out. People just wanted to have it. And I think they would have just bought them again anyway. But to make it something, you know, worthwhile and special, if you already owned it, we put all the bonus tracks and the stuff like that on there. And it's priced, like, phenomenally low, which that's Bloodshot. Mm. Bloodshot's doing, which is really cool. I mean, you know, that's a lot of stuff for not a lot of money. And it was
a cool booklet in there,
yeah.
And just all kind of cool memorabilia. And
so it was just, you know, it needed to be done, even though a CD is just maybe about the same as a 8-track these days as far as what people want. But we're lucky that we have fans. We have like the perfect demographic to where they're not necessarily as computer savvy as other bands have, but the dividend that pays off is they're still of the group that still buys CDs.
Okay.
So, you know, we have, I know personally, fans of ours that won't like even do the internet because they're certain that if as soon as they get on there, their bank account will be raided. You know, it's like that. That's how it is.
So basically, what you're saying is none of your fans are going to listen to our podcast.
No, they'll never hear this. I absolutely guarantee they'll never hear this.
A low percentage of them.
Right.
So but we'll get you some new fans.
That's like, what we're counting on.
And yes, there you exactly. go. And even just tonight, you and I, Brian, were sitting out front of the Kent stage, and four or five people just came up and said, never seen you before, that was awesome.
I know, so, we're still like getting new fans 20 years later.
Which is pretty cool, actually.
We might be popular right about the time we're like 74, 75 years old.
Did you meet the couple from Canada?
Which one were they?
Those two people I was talking to down the street. They came here from Peterborough, Ontario.
Whoa, I met a couple. Was
to see James, but they loved us.
Yeah, it might have been the ones that I was talking to. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Every kind of everything.
I don't know. But anyway, yeah, I talked to several people. Yeah. Never heard us, but loved it. So,
yeah.
20 years later.
There you go.
Yep. Still reaching the new fans.
Absolutely. Yep. So I guess you guys have been playing them in your live sets for a long time, but there are a couple of really, really key songs that were on those first couple of albums.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
90% of the people that come to see us want to hear that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we have... I've split our fans up into two groups. There's the well, I call the old, the first group is called the old 97s, okay? Because they pretty much are fans that stopped buying anything we ever made in 1997.
Okay.
But they love it so much, they still come see us based on the shit that we did up until 1997. So that's the old 97s. And then there's the other group, which I call the Zoysians, which is a new group of people came on when we made the Zoysia album. Mm-hmm. And then the things that came in between, I actually called the missing years.
Okay.
So it's kind of like I don't really know who bought those records. I hardly ever run into anyone that like came because like they came into us on those middle records,
mm-hmm.
which would have been like Blue Sky and Brand New Year, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So
I've met a couple, but they're rare.
That's the rarest group of all, that group. So there's the old 97s are probably the biggest group of fans we had. And then there's the missing years, mm-hmm. and then there's the Zoysians, who pretty much got that and then went backwards. So the Zoysians are actually completionists.
Gotcha.
Whereas the old 97s just stopped at 97.
Well, honestly, I fall into that last group there because I was a little bit too young for you guys, honestly. I was probably 11 when the first album came out, something like that.
Yep.
So I was listening to Jewel, actually.
Sure. Well, heck yeah.
But Hootie and the Blowfish was on 107.9 The End here in Cleveland and all that.
Yep.
But that's about what I picked you guys up again with.
There's a great
Zoysia
story Brian tells about... when the album Zoysia came out. You should tell the story, Brian.
Oh, yeah. The one with the girls?
Yeah, yeah.
Go for it, man.
Yeah, Zoysia came out. And we were playing. There was a long tour. We played a long time. Went all over the country. And everywhere we would go, we would see these young girls, like, up in the front row, singing all the words to our songs.
And that's a new experience for us.
It's like we never had young girls at our shows. It was always like we were a guys band, you know. It was all dudes. And then we kept seeing like these young, you know, good-looking girls, and the Zoysia just came out. I was like, this album is like bringing the girls out. I'm like, this is weird. I'm like, what the hell? What would girls be liking about this album?
And see, women really like grass.
Yeah, yeah. It was like of all albums, that would have been the last one I would have ever thought. Finally, at the end of the run, I just had to ask one of these girls, and I was like, you know, hey. You know, I've just been seeing this across the country. Like all these, you know, young girls like you are standing up front and singing the songs. And then the answer came right out of her mouth and it made perfect sense. She says, oh man, you guys are my dad's favorite band. And
nice.
I've been listening to you since I was like 6 years old. And they finally, that year, they turned old enough to go to bars.
Gotcha.
So as soon as they turned old enough to get into the shows, they came because they had a whole lifetime of hearing their dads play it. So
who were our fans like, you know, 20 years ago,
right,
asking
right.
us about, you know, fuzz boxes and guitar effects and stuff after
right,
the show,
right. So like
instead of girls at the show.
The old 97s had kids who became Zoysians, and maybe the kids turned dad on to stuff later on, I don't know. But it's funny. It's
These guys are still around.
When you're around that long, it's just so funny that you actually, like, have a generation come up, you know? Mm. It's like, wow, that's weird. Most bands don't last that long. because, you know, when we started out, these, if you're 22 years old coming to see us now, how the hell old were you when we started? You were 2 years old.
Right. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, it really is amazing in some ways that you guys have managed to stick it out so long. I mean, so many bands have come and gone.
Yep. They've had their Hootie moments and the Blowfish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was going to say. Yeah. Like, the people who had their moment in the spotlight, they burned out, you know? Uh-huh. Like, you don't see them anymore, but maybe you guys were lucky you never really had those big hits. Who knows?
Right.
And what will be
funny to see
music.
Us at the end of our lives, like, you know, like, take one of these bands that came and went in our time frame. Mm-hmm. Like, say, for instance, the Cherry Poppin' Daddies.
All right.
Okay? You know, a whole craze. So it'll be funny to see over the course of time, like at the end of our lives, we probably made the same amount of money. You know, it's like, yeah, even yeah. though they made a whole lot at one time,
right.
then they just didn't make it anymore. And yeah. then it's kind of like, so
they ended up baristas or something.
Yeah, right.
You guys are still playing music.
Yeah. So it all evens out in the end.
Here for the long haul.
Absolutely. So speaking of the long haul, I do want to mention a couple of songs in particular from the reissue, because it's one of those things where it's going to sound like I'm being over the top, but two of the songs of those albums I really think are among the best of the 20th century.
Oh, you're over the top.
I know, a little bit. No, I'll explain why.
You are over the top.
Let me tell you why. As far as folk music goes, I think Kerosene and Welfare Music hits the tone of just what the working person or the lower class person and what their life is about better than just about anything.
Well, there you go.
So I was wondering if you guys could talk a little bit about those songs and sort of how they came about and why the band focused on those kind of people when you were writing.
Well, those
lyrics, first of all.
Yeah, it's like they were actually our friend Scott Taylor wrote the lyrics to both of those.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know, you know, those were the people we lived around, so of course we could relate to it, absolutely. And that's why we did it, you know. More than that, you know, it was just, what were we going to do songs about, like, you know, flying to space or something? You know, it's like, you just do stuff about what you're around. Mm-hmm. And that's
so Will I Am and Britney sing songs about Will I Am and Britney.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Write about what you know.
Yeah. Right. I'm cooler than you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I gotcha. Well, I think that's something that has run through, I mean, all of those different eras. I mean, even you were saying, you know, the new people who came on. I mean, the songs, even right up until your latest albums, have always had that quality.
Well, it's probably just built in. I mean, you know, it's like I said, it's no matter what. I mean, even if we wrote about our life on the road,
right,
we are still dealing with those same people.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like, it's not like we ever like bumped up a class level or anything, you know. It's like, that's just the deal. That's our life. It's what we do. It's who we are. It's our thing. It's how we roll.
I gotcha.
That's what I'm about.
So your fans are pretty much still driving $1,000 cars.
Well, I don't know about that.
True. Actually, just at the end of this show, I'm walking through the lobby and some guy stopped me and said, "Hey, this morning I dealt with my son's $1,000 car and had to end up getting it towed."
Yeah.
So I said, that's, you know, you get a $7 tow for a $1,000 car. That's the way it goes.
Yep. Yes, indeed. So it's still true. Just one more question about the reissue. If you guys could tell us a little bit about those bonus tracks that you put on there. There's a bunch of live stuff, there's some demos. You know, how did you choose, first of all, from everything that you had, what you wanted to put on?
Well, first thing we had to do was find stuff that could actually be remastered and worked with. So that eliminated something. So, you know, we had to go fish through and find a pool of things that you could bring up to date just on the technical end of things.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, that was a whole lot of the dictating point. And it was just a good representation of back then, you know. Like, some of the stuff is, like, pretty crazy and far out there. And that's how we were back then. And it's just, you know, I don't know. It's kind of like,
it was an interesting view, too. A little peek at what went on before the band. You know, like the chicken truck stuff, which mm-hmm. was the the version of the Bottle Rockets before the Bottle Rockets, you know?
Okay.
And I do some of that, throw some of that on there, some of the demos, the demos that Brian did that got the record deal.
You right. Know, you know, it was stuff that was either worked.
Historic or interesting.
Historic,
or
had some, like yeah, some of the demos were like the very things that made things happen. You know, it's like this was the stuff that Steve Daly heard and said, I want you to have a record deal. So right. that was the guy from our first record label.
Gotcha.
And so, yeah, it's just sort of like historically significant stuff that we had laying around and was, you know, pretty fun and worth listening to. So it wasn't like a, really, we didn't slave over which ones went on there, but there's a little logic to it.
Okay. And when you were up on stage earlier tonight, you were talking about one of those tracks in particular that kind of bridges the gap between the past and the future.
Right.
So yeah. I think that's a good way for us to do that here, too. And which track was that, Brian?
That one's called Building Chrysler.
All right. And that's another working man song, yeah. For sure. It's along those lines.
That's from back then, yeah. When that was our, you know, that was way our deal, so yeah.
Yeah, and that was demoed for the Brooklyn side,
mm-hmm.
but for whatever reason wasn't included.
Yep.
And just
and it never sat it
neglected
never,
for 20
yeah,
years.
Yeah, it never made it past that. It was like it was that one thing that's on the reissues. That particular acoustic demo is the only place that ever existed. In one time, one shot, that's it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So did you basically just forget about it for the last 2 decades? Or so, was it sort of sitting in a drawer somewhere? Or?
I didn't.
No?
Yeah. I always wanted to come back to that. And whenever this project came up, I instantly like, okay, we're gonna scoop that one in and see what the guys think about including this one.
Okay. Well,
I always loved that song and just never forgot about it.
Gotcha. Okay. So the future part of this, I guess, is you're planning on hopefully putting it on the new album that you're going to start working on this summer, right?
Yep.
So why, I mean, obviously you had it that you always wanted to do, but why do you want to do that now and bring back a song that has been languishing for so long?
Because it's a good song.
Yeah. it's like, still relevant, still like works.
I still don't really know why it didn't really make the album. I have no idea, but it's like, you know, what the heck? Why not?
Well, back in those days, you had the corporate overlords telling you what made it and what didn't, right?
Well,
now you got a little more leeway, maybe.
Yeah, you can do anything you want.
But it's about timing. It just wasn't ready yet. You know, it's just now is the time to do that song.
Yeah. You had to let Chrysler get a couple more bailouts. That's
right.
What it was.
Yeah.
All right, well, I want to bring John in here because you've been sitting over there. You haven't gotten to talk about the old stuff much. But I guess What can you tell me about the new work that you're going to be doing this summer and some of the new songs? Can you guys give us a preview?
It's interesting. We're actually making the master plan right now on how we're going to do it, and it's the goal is it's kind of like the universal goal is to make the loosest Bottle Rockets album ever made. Like, there's no rules. There's no reason to have rules in this day and age. Like, none. There's no reason to worry about anything. You know, it's like there's any radio that will play us is going to play us no matter what.
Mm.
And any radio that isn't going to play us is not going to play us no matter how much we cater to them. You know, it's like it's just the way it is. You know, we're not going to be on what radio station would play us, like a big radio station. No, we don't even worry about that. So once you throw all these old things that you used to have some concerns about out the window, it's like anything can go. You know, it's like one thing that Eric Gamble had a brilliant idea is about half, you know, a lot of what we do these days is the house concerts, like the living room shows. So he said that should be part of the friggin' album. You know, it's like you guys, you know, of course you'll kind of decorate it out to make it into like a long-lasting piece of music, but there's no reason to not have like a very, you know, a bulk of the, you know, some of the shit be like that acoustic kind of thing. That's what we do. I mean, half the time you see us in this day and age, you're seeing us that way. And we do both. And so it's like, you know, there's no telling what we're gonna do. We're just like free-range chickens. And yeah, I don't know. We're just gonna start, just go in. We're gonna do it different this time and record in chunks, sections.
Okay.
Like, you know, do like three, four songs and then get them all done and mix them a little, and just stop for a little bit, you know, and then that will direct us, you know, it'll be easy to see, okay, we have too much of this or we don't have enough of that or whatever. And who knows how it's going to turn out? Who cares? It's going to be great.
And we want to try and record in St. Louis as well, which would be a new experience for us.
Yep.
Okay. So a little closer to home for once,
yep.
Huh?
Yeah.
That's cool. So you guys are one of the few bands, I mean, I know a few others who do it well, but who can really just rock, you know, melt somebody's face right off, but they can also play an acoustic show and have it be really intimate and really interesting and just change gears like that. So how are you going to sort of blend those two different elements on the new album?
We'll just stick them on there.
All right.
Yeah.
Figure out how it goes?
Neil Young does it all the time.
Yeah.
It's easier than you think.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, Neil Young's been doing it for 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah, it's no secret, really. Just do it.
You just do it.
I got you. So you have been playing out a number of the songs, and you played several of them tonight. Can you just give the listeners a little preview of a couple of them and what they're about? And...
Well, there's Monday Every Time I Turn Around, which is pretty much self-explanatory. You know, it's like, you know, friggin' every time.
Passage of time.
Yeah, you know, weeks are flying by, so.
And always landed on the worst day of the week.
Yeah, it's just... You just, you know, every time you turn around, it's friggin' Monday again. So, you know, that's one of them. That's a simple time passage song. And then there's, you know, there's Big Lots of Love, which has a great story behind it. It's just a simple little, it's a love song. It's a mature love song. It's not young love, so New Country will never play it. It's not about young love or recreation, so forget about it in New Country.
Not to mention tailgate ones.
Yeah, right. There's no tailgates in it, damn it.
Yeah. But that is a good story, though. Would you mind telling that?
Oh, man. It's just, it's a long story.
No. Fair enough.
Come see a house concert.
Right.
There you go.
Come see a house concert and you'll get the story.
All right. Well, everybody check that out. It's worth it. I've heard it before.
Yeah.
Anything else that you want to mention from the new songs?
There's stuff that we haven't even really, you know, we worked on it like one time in my kitchen and haven't even really gotten back to it yet. So, you know, there's all sorts of, you know, I've got this weird one called Ship It on the Frisco, which I can't even tell you what, you know, it's like, it's going to be a pretty kind of an out there record for us. You know, it's because we're not trying to do anything. I'm not even worrying about continuity. You know, it's like I'm just thinking it like of the 60s. Everything's a single.
Okay.
You know, and then just do it like that. You know, it's friggin' Beatles mentality. You know, the album is kind of a done thing. You know, people buy one song at a time. It's like you can spend all your time like dwelling on making an album. And it just goes nowhere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that by just releasing the bondage of that thought process, it may turn into a really cool album.
Yeah, it's an odd collection of songs.
Yep.
I gotcha. Yeah, I think it really is interesting to see that change because of, like you said, the digitalization. I mean,
you know, when we first saw it was Zoysia, 2006. Yeah. That's when I first saw, I mean, we were kicking it old school. We were slaving over the artwork.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we did the whole, like, magnificent story inside the thing.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of interviews for that record. And no one ever mentioned any of that stuff. And it was at that point that I realized no one had that stuff.
Mm.
Because people didn't buy albums anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They just took it off, you know, got it off the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that it was kind of like, well, fuck, it was all for nothing.
Right.
You know, it's like at best, the album cover is coming up as a tiny little thing on your iPod.
Right.
And the fact that the advanced copies that get sent out are just kind of like, you know, generic cardboard sleeves from the record label. So the writers get
the writers have nothing
without the actual artwork.
I'll tell you what, we don't even get that anymore. We get the digital stuff.
Yeah.
Honestly, like from my perspective, that annoys me too because like I want to be able to
get.
Oh, I believe it.
I didn't know it. I bought some sunglasses. Outdoor outfitting place, I got the sunglasses.
Yeah.
We're on Spotify, you said?
Yeah. I didn't even know. Some of the glasses were asking.
Yeah.
Where I was from, I told them why we're here playing. Did I recognize a band? Probably not. What does a band sound like? I don't know. This, that, and the other. You got Spotify? I don't know. So they got out the iPhone. Oh, yeah, you're on Spotify.
Yeah.
Is that you guys? Oh, yeah, that's us. Yeah.
Oh, I know we are, because I've seen in my Facebook news feed, it's like, so and so just listen to Things You Didn't Know by the Bottle Rockets on Spotify.
There you go.
So
you guys should be getting a very tiny check from them at some point.
Oh, man, I'm not even worried about this shit.
Yeah.
At this stage of the game, we're not in it for the money.
Yeah.
Nobody is.
Yeah, right.
It's just what you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, music is free now. Yeah. That's just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're lucky, like I said, to have a fan base that will still buy some CDs.
Yeah.
And I guarantee we sell more at shows than we do in record stores. Because for one thing, you got to find a record store.
Right.
And, good luck with that.
Yeah.
And we are the record store.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, some bands don't even have that. Mm-hmm. They can't even sell a dang CD. So we can actually still sell some of those. Which is cool, kicking it a little old school, still feeling a little wisp of old music business going around. But yeah, to really devote your time to worry about artwork and stuff like that, man, that's just, if you got the time, okay. But you don't waste time on it, because it just doesn't. Don't waste time or money on it, because it doesn't mean anything.
I gotcha. Well, everybody, just remember, you can still always get the high-res cover art on No Surf Music. I always post it there.
There you go.
So maybe the last place on Earth, but it's there.
Oh, yeah.
So let me just ask you guys, going even farther into the future, sort of, because you've been talking about, how long you've been on the road and how you don't really do it for money anymore, and, it's really just what you do. So what do you guys see for the bands going into the future, staying on the road?
There is really no telling. There's just no telling. It's totally crapshoot.
It's not just us either.
No.
It's not, this is nothing. It's not. It's kind
of, I mean, there literally may be no music business in 10 years. Mm.
It's funny you should talk about that in referencing music story. I know the people who have vintage vinyl and St. Louis. Tom Ray, we were talking about this one time, and he said that 20 years ago, he used to be able to see exactly what was coming down the road, when it was going to get here. I mean, he could see, where it was going to go, how we could sell it, how much was it sell, And he said, now, you can't tell. You just can't tell at all. And I think, he's kind of in a similar boat.
Mm-hmm.
That bands like us are, in regards to that.
It's just no telling.
We talked about this last time, too, I think.
We did a little bit. We were talking, I was more broad than what you guys are planning on doing.
Yeah.
But, I think it's something that always comes up, because we are in such a transition kind of an area as far as music goes. You guys have lived it basically over the last 20 years.
We actually saw it change during our career.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we were still in the old days. We've been in it since before internet.
Right.
So, there was no www.anything when we, on our first three albums.
The Russians were still trying to steal it from us.
Yeah, right.
It's
yep.
We want to launch your missiles.
But, it's like you just got to look at it, people, there's a bunch of people that are in a tirade over getting ripped off on money and all that stuff. But man, the cat, you can't put that cat back in the bag now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not defending it. I wish it could be the old way. I wish you could still get paid for that stuff. But it's like, it is literally like if suddenly on the internet you were able to get food through the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Free. Like nutrition and flavor and the whole bit, and it was free on your phone. Here's food. I want a steak dinner, and it's right there for free on my phone. Now, what is going to happen to the restaurant business? What's going to happen there? Then you're going to have the people in the restaurant business trying to convince people why it's still a good thing to come to a restaurant.
Right. Right.
And then you're going to have the sympathy towards that from the general public that you will get from a general public that's getting free food on their telephone.
Yeah, but they still take the free food over the phone.
Yeah, right.
No matter how bad it was.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's kind of like that's why you
maybe,
you
maybe that's a pretty good analogy. Like, imagine what kind of food you can get for free over your phone.
Yeah,
and that's about the quality of music.
Exactly,
it is. But as long as there's some folks out there who are willing to stick it out and keep, you know, doing it because it's art. Like Mark said earlier, you know, I think in the model I see is just like you said, you're going to sell more at your shows than you're ever going to sell through a record store. So just keep on the road and making new fans like you guys did earlier tonight, like you were saying.
Yeah,
so
we actually seem to be doing that. And even though we're really in between albums, this reissue is kind of given a new focus for touring this year. And people are buying the record, they're like rediscovering the band, and they're finding this new thing, us as well as those first two records, which are kind of new to them, and they're happy to get them, excited to get them.
Absolutely. Well, I certainly was excited to hear it myself, and I knew all those songs, but there is a ton of great material on it, even if you know all of them. And like I said, you know, some of that stuff from the early years is just terrific, so nobody wants to miss it.
Yeah, right.
So that's The Bottle Rockets and The Brooklyn Side, double album. It's on Bloodshot Records. It's available now. Everybody, I'm telling you, just get it. If you've never heard those albums, it is so worth it. Back in the old days when the Bottle Rockets didn't do nothing but rock.
Yes.
And I really want to thank you guys again for joining us.
Yeah, sure.
You know, hopefully when the new album comes out, we'll be able to sit down again and we'll be able to talk about it, having heard it. So that'll be really cool,
do this
too.
Again.
Awesome. Yeah. We're really looking forward to it. It was a terrific show. Once again, Mark, Brian, John, thank you very much.
And the new guy.
The new guy who didn't get to talk that much.
Yep.
Sorry, but I tried to bring you in at the end,
right,
man. The new stuff, you know?
He got to talk more than Keith did.
That's true. That's true. Keith disappeared on us. He's no longer famous. That's the way it works. Anyway, thank you, gentlemen, once again. It was great to talk to you.
Right.
And this has been another edition of No Surf Music's Burning River Fireside Chats. Once again, perched right over the Burning River. So this was a great experience.
In the dark.
All right.
Cuyahoga.
This has been a No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammett, signing off. Remember, No Surf Music is your source for the best in Americana, alt-country, indie rock, and more. For original reviews and interviews, visit nosurfmusic.com.